I'm Mike Lupica, MSNBC and MLB.com.
I'm Robert Wall from Arliss, now streaming on HBO Go, HBO Now.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, author of the new book, The Next Person You Meet in Heaven. And welcome to this Friday edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast as we head into the next to the last week of the NFL season. We do this podcast every Monday and Friday. And yes, if this is the first time you're listening to us, it is the podcast version of the long-running TV show on ESPN. The conversation continues twice as nice now on Mondays and Fridays. And the news today is actually a story that we probably talked about at some point on the TV show, because it's a repeat again for Josh Gordon, who seemed to have found new life with the New England Patriots. And many thought, wow, talk about a perfect opportunity for New England and a perfect chance for redemption for Josh Gordon. And now the news comes that the often suspended wide receiver has been suspended yet again indefinitely by the NFL. Not sure if this is going to be the death knell or not for his career. He tweeted out that he's leaving the game for a period of time to take care of mental health issues and focus on his mental health. But that seemed to me, anyhow, to be as much a get out in front of the story as necessarily the truth. What do we think of this latest sad chapter in Josh Gordon's career?
Well, I mean, we can only infer that he failed a test, and we don't know what he failed the test for. And Robert, Mitch and I were talking about it before we started today. To me, this is such a sad story. And you know, the people who say, oh, well, they should have known this was coming. Well, maybe they should have known this was coming. But, you know, we do live in a redemptive society and one of second and third and fourth chances. John Lucas, who had his own substance abuse problems and then became a leader in this field of trying to help athletes get well, once said to me when I was banging around Steve Howe and him, all the chances he got, yeah, he called me up and he said, what if it was your own child? And it made me look at this differently. And here's why, to me, this is a tragedy. Here's a guy whose chance was not just a football chance. It was a chance with the New England Patriots. It was a chance to play for the greatest coach of all time. It was a chance to get thrown to by the greatest quarterback of all time. And he couldn't keep himself together. And to me, knowing the consequences of what would happen to him if he failed again, he still went ahead and did it. And it just shows the power of this disease. And anybody who's saying I told you so lacks humanity. That's just my opinion.
Well, I agree with everything you said. I had a comic friend who had similar drug problems, and he had fallen off the wagon a couple, two, three times, four times, I don't know how many, and a police detective friend of mine came with me to see a taping of his show that I was on. He was now hosting a show, and he turned to me afterwards, and he said, I think he's on again. And I said, what do you mean he's on again? Because I could tell. He goes, why? He goes, Robert, he's a junkie. Always remember that. And I felt, oh, God, I don't want to hear that, but I knew, as you said, it's true. But here's the one thing that does bother me about the situation. Yes, he should get a second chance, third chance, fourth chance. But the problem is that by giving this guy so many chances, you have taken away an opportunity for somebody else whose dream was also to play in the NFL and who worked hard and would have done everything. And his opportunity was taken away repeated times by this situation. And that's the guy who I feel worse for.
You know, we're talking without full knowledge here.
Correct.
And let us say that right off the bat.
I don't know what
he did. Because there's a wide spectrum of possibility here. For example, if this guy was addicted to opioids, addicted to alcohol, and it was a lifelong battle, and it just, you know, something emotional happened and he returned to the substance that comforted him through the course of his life, just can't break loose from it, then it's a tragic addict story that has been told many times over in many fields in many parts of America. If, on the other hand, he just figured, you know, I'm doing good now, I'm going to smoke some weed and nobody's going to catch me, and oops, I got snared in a urine test, your empathy and sympathy is not quite at the same level. And so couching the fact that we don't know this, although it does seem that to put out a tweet and this is the whole thing about the world of tweets, that's all the information you have, that I'm going to focus on my mental health while the NFL is putting out a tweet saying he has violated the league's substance abuse policy. Yeah. There's a little gap between those two things. Okay, and right off the bat, Josh Gordon is not being honest, and his lack of honesty has what is what's cost him throughout the course of his career.
Addicts lie.
First time, second Addicts time, lie. Third time, right. I'm good, exactly. I'm clean, I'm going to be, I got it, I learned my lesson, I did it. And he's still showing the exact same thing. You know, you can say I need to focus on my mental health, but acknowledge the fact that you've been suspended for violating the substance abuse. But he didn't do that. He just said, I'm stepping
exactly.
away. I don't know what kind of illusionary world he thinks he's in because the news is out there that you violated the substance abuse policy. I'm not being harsh, and I don't have the right, nor do any of us, to be judgmental without full fact. But I will say this, Robert, about what you just said. Unlike perhaps the comedian's world, the NFL has an infrastructure to help you with these things, unlike almost any other career in the world. If you've got, you know, issues with this, from counselors to people to talk to support staff to all the rest of it, they've got all of that to just to try to keep you clean. Very few jobs provide that kind of support. And to deny all of that and to keep breaking these rules over and over and over again is either a sign of someone whose addictive personality just cannot be helped, or a sign of someone who just figures, I got a third chance, I'll get a fourth chance. I got a fourth chance, I'll get a fifth chance. I don't know which.
Mitch, but all right, let's just, and again, we don't know, but he violated the substance abuse policy. But, and again, but what kind of madness would make him think that if he did say, smoke some weed, he wasn't going to get caught? I mean, this guy has, we know what his track record is. This Tara Sullivan wrote a wonderful column today in the Boston Globe. She's a terrific columnist, okay? And she referenced a November 2017 Sports Illustrated profile about Gordon, who was returning from his first indefinite suspension, okay? And he told the writer, Ben Raskin, he never even planned on living past 18. Not a chance, he told Baskin. Not after growing up in a crime-riddled, gang-infested section of Houston where he learned to use marijuana, Adderall, Xanax, other prescription drugs, and, of course, alcohol on a daily basis. Somehow, he still made it to the NFL. Somehow, he held it together briefly to look like he had a chance to be one of the great receivers of his time. So, again, he knew the consequences of another violation of the substance abuse policy, and we can only infer, since he got suspended for it, that he went ahead and did it anyway. So I don't think that this is arrogance or ego or anything on his part. I just think he's sick.
It's quite possible. I mean, I think everything we've said, I think we've covered everything. You know, the humorist, the comic in me thinks he's now going to be considered for Secretary of Defense. But that's the comic in me.
Or confirmed.
Right. But the fact is that this has happened. It's happened over again. Now, the question becomes, let's take it to the next step. How does this affect the New England Patriots? This is a team that has been, you know, working uphill a little bit. Granted, they've been in the greatest division in the history of mankind if you were a winner. I mean, that AFC East is really dreadful, has been for years. But he did give them a weapon that they sorely needed, and that weapon is now gone. Now, does other people step up? Do they have the people that can step up?
Well, the thing about New England is, first of all, you know, once again, they show their sort of brilliance above everybody else. They gave away nothing for this guy, nothing that they're going to miss. They got, you could argue that they got a handful of wins thanks to him being on the roster. I mean, you know, he obviously didn't single-handedly win games for them, but giving Brady that option and that true wide receiver option, he was their number two receiver or equal to the number two receiver with Julian Edelman, and he certainly allowed Brady some comfort, and he was really playing, you know, as well as Josh Gordon has played, and of course he gets to play with the greatest of all time there. But the thing about the Patriots is when they lose a player, they're more than just next guy up. That's what everybody else in the NFL does. Okay, we lost a wide receiver. Who's our next wide receiver? What the Patriots do is say, okay, we lost a wide receiver. We may need to start using our running backs more. We may need to, you know, shift the game more around Gronkowski now. Whatever. They changed the whole offense based on who's in and who's out. They have, I mean, when you look at their receiving core, you know, Mike and Robert, Julian Edelman, Chris Hogan, Cordarrelle Patterson, Philip Dorsett. That's it. That's what they're heading to the Super Bowl with. And, of course, Rob Gronkowski, who week after week is a mystery as to, is he healthy? Is everybody covering him too much? Why isn't he doing? Oh, look, there's a touchdown pass. So this is nothing new for New England. They just will adjust their entire offense. Something tells me that they'll still win a few more games. But they will definitely miss what he brought to the table on the Sundays that they have left in this season.
Yeah, I mean, listen, their road has gotten a lot harder, and road may be the operative word, and a lot of bad news has happened to the Patriots since that last play against the Dolphins, and they haven't won a game since. They lost to the Steelers, and they've put themselves into a more precarious December position than they're accustomed to, and now they have lost a major offensive weapon. They have stopped running the ball. Brady has not looked like himself. And, yeah, of course, can the Patriots surprise us one more time? If they surprise us, we shouldn't be surprised because of what they've done over the years. But, man, oh, man, this looks like a limited offense to me as we move up on January. Yeah.
What's interesting to me this year is generally we find a team or two, one of the top teams, who is really good on the road and they're dominating. I'm not seeing that so much this year. All the teams, Pittsburgh, New Orleans, Los Angeles, New England, they are dominant at home and different teams on the road. Maybe Chicago's been playing better. Actually, for the first time, the Los Diego Chargers, whatever they are, the... I'm sorry, I'm an old AFL guy. They seem to, for the first time, they're playing well on the road, and they never played well on the road. So I'm really curious to see who steps up, because home games are really important, it seems. Usually they're not as, but to those teams, boy, they're different teams on the road.
Well, let's talk about the games that are coming up, and we can go right off of the New England Patriots' loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers last week, 17-10, to set up the Steelers. Yeah, boy, talk about back-to-back weeks. Okay, you get to play the Patriots one week, and then the New Orleans Saints the next, down in New Orleans. This is there are a handful of kind of marquee games that are going to determine a lot of playoff futures this weekend. There are a lot of those 8-6 and 7-7 teams that are going to be out of it or into it after this week is over. Pittsburgh is unusual in that they're actually, even though the record is 8-5-1, they could, depending on what happens this weekend, could either clinch their division and lock in a playoff spot, depending on if the Chargers lose to Baltimore. If the Baltimore loses to Chargers tomorrow, or they could be on the outside looking in if the Ravens win that game and the Steelers should lose to New Orleans. And New Orleans, meanwhile, needs one more win and they're home. They don't travel again till the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal to the New Orleans Saints because they play pretty well down there. Who are we liking this game?
Oh, man. Mitch, when I see the Steelers play at their best, and I don't think they were at their best, but they won the kind of game you have to win in December at home last week, okay? When I see them at their best, I believe that they can compete with anybody in the conference. I do. But can I see them getting their doors blown off? I don't see them getting their doors blown off by the Saints because, Mitch and Robert, the Saints haven't looked great the last few weeks. And even Drew Brees, who we were ready to anoint as the MVP, maybe, of the NFC, he hasn't looked great. So I expect I will not be shocked if the Steelers win this game, even on the road and even in that particular setting.
The thing about the Steelers, interesting, as poorly as they've played lately on the road, is the fact that I don't think there's a team, maybe the Cowboys, who travel as well with a crowd on the road. You go to see a Steeler game on the road, you'd swear you're in Pittsburgh half the time. Maybe the Cowboys,
Eagles look like they travel pretty well to the Los Angeles Coliseum.
Yeah, really,
what the hell was that
about, by the way?
That was great.
You know, I grew up in Philadelphia. We didn't have enough money to go out to L.A. to watch games.
Boy, they must have
Mitch, remember what the song is, though. fly eagles fly.
That's right.
Okay.
Apparently,
so maybe it's
apparently
frequent
there's a cheap
fly.
Airline.
Maybe it's frequent fly eagles yeah. fly.
Maybe they're taking all that Manny Machado, Bryce Harper stupid money that yeah. they're going out there with. You know, it's funny. I was watching that game. They did a replay last night of the Steelers New England game, and I'm watching the two coaches on the sideline. You had Bill Belichick, you know, who's certain Hall of Famer, and Mike Tomlin, who's well on his way to being a Hall of Famer. And I'm thinking, you know what makes great Hall of Fame coaches? Hall of Fame quarterbacks. I'm watching yeah. these. And then I started doing some research that out of all the coaches in the Hall of Fame, 12 of them, only 3 of them did not have a Hall of Fame quarterback. And by the way, 2 of them are Parcells, who had Sims, who was borderline, Joe Gibbs, who had Theismann, who's borderline, and the other, believe it or not, is Sid Gilman, who was the father of all the quarterbacks.
Whoa. You know I love you, okay?
Good.
When did Joe Theismann become a borderline Hall of Fame quarterback in pro football?
Okay, so he's on the other side of the border. So...
That's why Gibbs is one of the greatest coaches
different
of all time.
3 different quarterbacks.
Mark Rippon, Doug Williams, and Joe Theismann. He never gets enough love in the greatest coaches of all time conversation.
Right, but I'm saying that great quarterback. I mean, Shula had 3 Hall of Fame quarterbacks. I mean, that's what separates, I think, the people who do this. That's why people will pay for quarterbacks, and they will overpay for quarterbacks. It is the most difficult position in sports. Arguably, hitting a baseball is the toughest act. But the single toughest position is quarterback, and that's
Well, the Saints don't have a problem at quarterback.
Exactly.
And Pittsburgh doesn't have a problem at quarterback.
Exactly.
Unless you're asking that Saints defensive player who said that Ben Roethlisberger isn't even a top 5 guy. Okay.
This is such a good game, though. Don't you think, man?
Yes.
I think it's a really good game, and I think that trending, if you were to use that popular word, the Steelers are trending up, and the Saints have been trending down or holding
treading,
steady.
Treading.
They have not, you know, blown anybody out since they, you know, about probably 4 weeks ago when they did that to the Eagles. But otherwise, you know, they struggled against Carolina. What was it, 12-9? They didn't really beat Tampa Bay that well, and they lost the week before. They're kind of slowed down. It looks like they peaked in terms of that machine thing that we were watching, where, you know, they score 45, 50 points every week. But they were also played the last 3 weeks on the road, which is weird. You know, that rarely happens in the NFL. And so now they're home. I mean, they literally cannot. It's amazing. After being 3 weeks on the road, they may not have to leave their town from December, whatever it was when they came home, you know, last week, 16th or something like that, until February something, if they make it to the Super Bowl. And that's what they're playing for. And I would favor them. I just don't trust Pittsburgh. I'm sorry. They got a lot of pieces, but they're not consistent. And we've seen them play a really tough it out game against New England when they had to have to stay alive. But that to me just kind of sets them up for an off week where you go, so what happened to the team that was last week? I'm going with New Orleans.
Okay. All right. You just brought up a great word. When you look at the NFC, okay, and we talk about trending, all right? And so we don't know which way the Saints are trending, okay? The Rams have a soft place to land at the Cardinals on Sunday, okay? So they have a chance to get to 12-3. But when you look at the NFC right now, and I don't know, you know, they don't have a sexy game. They go out to Santa Clara on Sunday. Maybe the trending team that we got to keep focused on is the Chicago Bears, okay? The Chicago Bears, because of the way they play defense, because of the way the Rams have come back, and you know, Lou gave us that great stat the other day, Goff, since the Chiefs game, 1 touchdown pass, 7 interceptions. Breeze has been middling at best. Maybe right now, you know, especially after what happened to the Cowboys, the trending team in the NFC might be the old-fashioned monsters of the Midway.
Without a doubt. Plus, they play the type of game that identifies the Chicago Bears. You know, certain teams have identities, and you love to have the smash-mouth defense. I also wonder, though, how tough is that division that they've been in? It's
hey, they got the Lions, Robert, okay?
No, that's not fair, Robert.
No, I know Minnesota's, and no, Green Bay is still Green Bay, I suppose.
I mean, if two of the 3 other teams that you have to play are perennially – tough.
Yeah.
You're in a tough division.
Okay. I'll give
you
that.
In a tough division. You know this isn't New England where you get Miami, Buffalo, and the Jets every year. You know,
That's true. That's what I said. The AFC East is...
I mean, Minnesota was a snip away from going to the Super Bowl last year. Green Bay is always tough. They're obviously having a weird year this year. The Lions are the only team that belongs in the AFC East. But no, the Bears are...
The story of the Bears is the turnaround.
They're not going to get home field, Mike. I mean, the Saints are too far ahead, and I think the Saints are going to win one of the two that they have left, obviously. I think they'll win this weekend, and everybody's going to have to go through New Orleans, and the Chicago Bears and the freezing cold and Soldier Field and defense and all that get mitigated a little bit in that stadium down in the bayou. But, I think if I'm picking a team that seems to be getting better every week, it's the Chicago Bears. The Saints, as you pointed out, the Rams, as you pointed out, are kind of hitting the brakes, but that's all relative. I mean, they zoomed ahead so far that maybe this is one of those sort of gather yourselves and then make the final push as opposed to a going backwards. I'm not going to pick against either of those teams given the way that they have played this year. They're just too good. There are a couple of other interesting games here that have ramifications for what ultimately happens in the playoffs. I mean, Kansas City Seattle is a really fascinating game to me. There were times you want to talk about runaways. There were times where we just thought Kansas City just give them the Super Bowl right now. Look at the way that they're playing. But again, another team that over the last few weeks has not been the same in certain areas, most particularly running. You know, Kareem Hunt, when he did what he did, everybody was so self-righteous about it and rightfully so. And like, look, he doesn't belong in the game and he can't do that. And we're going to be fine without him. And Kansas City kept winning. And so it was like, well, all right, but if you really look at the numbers, and remember, this is a team now, Kansas City has lost twice in its last four games. You know, a team that didn't seem that they were going to lose at all. They lost to the Rams in that shootout, and they lost to the Chargers in that really great game, 29-28. Now they go on the road to play in Seattle. They don't run the way they used to run. All right? I mean, Hunt had 800-something yards when he left the game. The next closest guy has like 200. So they don't run the same way. The Seahawks have a defense that when they want to get on you, they're really, really good. And I could absolutely see Seattle winning this game. And if Seattle wins this game, not only do they stay in this hunt, but Kansas City is no sure lock in terms of where it's going to be placed. They once were a sure number one seed. They could ultimately fall as low as four or five.
Mitch and Robert, okay. Who do you think is more likely to win out? The Chiefs? And, Mitch, you keep pointing this out. This is more football than Patrick Mahomes ever played, okay? He's now getting into the area where he's played more football than he's ever played. But look, the Chargers have the Ravens, which is it's a Sunday night, Saturday night game, excuse me, fascinating game, and then at Broncos. Are you going to be shocked if the Chargers end up winning this division? I'm not.
I'm loving the AFC. As an old AFL fan this year, I'm seeing Houston, Kansas City, and the San Diego, like I said, or Los Angeles Chargers prominent again. I'm loving this thing. I just this is old time. This is old time stuff for me. So I'm enjoying this and watching these teams. I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked.
Ravens Chargers, Mitch. That's a great
one.
That's
a terrific
game. This weekend?
Another game that's got huge ramifications all the way across
with
the board.
With my guy, quarterback of the Ravens, my guy Lamar. Look out.
Well, that's a great game, and I have no idea which way it's going to go. I mean, I think Phillip Rivers has got those guys playing at a certain level now. He's getting some long overdue recognition, although it's going to be meaningless if he just does what Phillip Rivers does in the playoffs.
That you just made a great point. And you've talked about this with the Chargers before, okay? And they fall back, but every time they have stepped squarely into the spotlight across Rivers' career, they don't make it to the big game. And that, to me, Mitch, you have talked about this for a few weeks. Yeah. It's going to be fascinating now when they're not chasing anybody now. They're 11-3. The Chiefs are 11-3. Their destiny is in pretty much in their own hands, especially with the game that the Chiefs have. It will be interesting to see if the Chargers are actually ready for prime time.
I have nephews that grew up and still live in San Diego, and they have been on me forever about the Eli Manning versus Philip Rivers argument for the Hall of Fame. And I said, listen, Philip Rivers is a great regular season quarterback, but Eli does have two Super Bowl rings, and he was the MVP. This is his opportunity, no doubt. This could be the last stand. He's had a marvelous career. When you think of that draft class of Rivers, Roethlisberger, and Eli Manning, pretty damn good. But you're 100% right. They got to win a big game sometime. You have to win a big game at some point. And this is the opportunity. This is the year.
You know, the Chargers, interestingly, have more Pro Bowl players than anybody else. This is the year when they are star-studded. And, you know, look, it took John Elway a long time to win a Super Bowl, and then he won two of them. It's not unheard of that, you know, maybe finally Philip Rivers' ship is coming in with some really talented guys, but we're going to have that discussion in a couple of months' time because we can't have it.
Hey, by the way, before we get off the subject of the NFL and whether there's any other games you guys want to talk about, have you followed the story that has been raised by Eric Reed, who was, you know, took a long time to get a job, knelt next to Colin Kaepernick, how many times he's been randomly, and he put random on social media, selected to be drug tested after games?
I did read that. Was it like 7 times in 2 weeks or something like
that? Do you believe in coincidence, Robert? Because I kind of don't. You don't think the league is singling out Eric Reed? Do you?
That's pretty remarkable.
Did you see this, Mitch?
Yeah, I saw it, and I don't know. I don't know what the norm is, and I don't know what I don't.
Seven's not the norm. Seven's not the norm.
Eric Reed's got a reason to be suspicious. Let's put it that way. But I don't know. As long as it keeps passing him, he's going to have the last laugh.
Do you know something else? You were talking about the Chargers a second ago. I just realized, if the Chargers should, you know, because they can become the number one seed, it's conceivable you could have at least the AFC Championship game played in a stadium that seats about 25,000 people.
I know. And wasn't there a thing about the naming rights that they were embarrassed that they've now changed? I forget what it was. There's some story that they didn't want the naming rights to be what they had been. All right, couple of things. Are we buying or selling on the Indianapolis Colts, who play at home against the Giants on Sunday? 8-6. They have absolutely played themselves, not into the tournament, but boy, oh boy, they have been fun to watch for about 6 weeks.
I love them. I mean, I think that this is especially against the Giants, who have no reason to, you know, be playing anything. They have an absolute opportunity to go to 9-6, maybe even 10-6 on the season. And considering, you know, Andrew Luck, it's an interesting story with him because everybody was so high on him when he first came out.
Yeah.
And then those injuries just sort of relegated him in a lot of people's minds to, okay, he's just one of those damaged good guys, and it's just not going to happen. But if you look at what they have done, with the exception of a absolute weird aberration to Jacksonville a few weeks ago where they lost 6-0, that's a baseball score. I don't know what that is, but they have won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 out of those last 8, including beating the Cowboys 23-0. Now, if they can beat the Cowboys 23-0, they should not have a lot of trouble with the New York Giants. And they are, and then they got a big game against Tennessee on the road to end their season. I really like them. And we talk about Philip Rivers, and of course, his story has played out over a much longer period of time, but there's a real, reclamation story going on for Andrew Luck as well. A lot of people very quickly sold his stock, so to speak, and maybe a little too soon because he's too young to write off and say, well, he's just never going to be healthy. And we're seeing what he can do now with a healthy team and a decent defense. Really,
hey, Robert, we were talking about this the other day, and, you know, everybody has a bad day. There have been some bizarre scores this year. The Bills went into Minnesota and slapped the Vikings around. But the Cowboys were hot. The Cowboys were one of the hottest teams in the league going into that Colts game. And so, you know, as great as Luck has been, the Colts must be able to play some kind of defense because it's hard to shut teams out in the NFL.
very hard. And there lies the great William Goldman quote, nobody knows anything.
Right.
Because on the same token, the Colts lost to the Jets.
I know.
Go figure. Now,
that was a long time ago.
It is a long time ago. And also, again, the Colts played at home. And that's that. When they're at home, they're a different team totally. Most of the indoor teams are different teams at home. This year, I'm looking so forward to the playoffs. I just want to say, because look at the stars you're going to have. You're going to have Brady, Roethlisberger, Rivers, Mahomes, Watson, Luck, Breeze. I mean, every game is going to be exciting, I think. I got one other one
that we haven't discussed, and we've talked about one of the teams. Texans at Eagles.
Texans.
That's a terrific game on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Again, great games. Great games.
Yeah, we're gonna get a lot of clarity after this week.
I hope so, Mitch. We need some clarity.
Well, there's gonna be some more. That you mentioned that Tennessee Indianapolis game. That is going to mean something. One of those teams is going to make.
And who would have thought, Robert? Who would have thought a month ago that was going to be a meaningful game at the end of the year?
Do you know what I was? Again, going back to the Pittsburgh thing, I was watching the game replay last night, and I thought. The person whose career I think this year probably made the. What about Le'Veon Bell? I'm watching this game. I'm thinking, here's
what
his.
What was he thinking? Well, what was he thinking?
At some point, you got to play. You know, I've been involved with a lot of strikes, you know, as a writer, as an actor. And at some point, you have to, unless you can shut down the industry, like a writer's guild, something like that, at some point, they're going to go on without you. And not only are they going on without him, they're winning without him. And also, I think he's hurting other players' positions because other owners are going to say, look, if they can win without Le'Veon Bell, I can win without you.
Hey, to paraphrase an old line from the criminal justice system, Mitch, where does Bell go to get these Sundays back?
Yeah, well, he's not. And I guess in his mind, he's going to be healthier, or he won his pound of flesh, or he showed them, or whatever. Uh-huh. Okay. It's a mystery, and you know, I do think I hear what you're saying, Robert, about you know some of the ramifications on other players.
Yeah.
But I also think that he's a cautionary tale to other players as well. That you know these games of chicken that you play with your team. James Conner, I think, got to the Pro Bowl, even though he's hurt. And, you know, they will find a way to play without you. You can lose that battle, too.
Yes.
And so I'm not so sure that everybody's going to go down the Le'Veon Bell path. I think a lot of people learn lessons from watching what they
did. And by the way, we began to just bring this back to how we started. And obviously, this isn't whataboutism, okay? But we're talking about second chances and the redemptive power of sports, but it only really works in sports if you produce. Okay, I think we agree with that. You get more second chances if you're good. Ray Rice didn't get one because he wasn't that good at football anymore. On Sunday, with probably his first carry against the Browns, Joe Mixon is going to go past 1,000 yards. Okay. Now, I'm not drawing a line between what Mixon did to what Kareem Hunt did, but it's pretty much the same thing, and it's pretty much a hideous event against a woman. Okay, he's going to go past 1,000 yards, and I'm just wondering where Kareem Hunt's life is going to take him. And it's easy now to say, well, Josh Gordon, who has a far different kind of rap sheet in a different sort of world, it's easy to say, well, this is it for him in the NFL. Guess what? What is he, 28 years old? Who's to say?
Oh, I have a hard time thinking that we have seen the last football game for Kareem Hunt. He's just too talented, and the league just has a history of finding, you know, reasons that talented people can be given opportunities again. And yeah, what Josh Gordon's a different category, but how many chances has Josh Gordon gotten because of his talent? And Ray Rice was a different story because Ray Rice was towards the end of his career. We all know that Ray Rice would have found his way back into the NFL as well. And when Kareem Hunt takes responsibility for what he did to the satisfaction of the Greek chorus that rules public opinion. And suddenly, you know, they'll say, all right, well, you know, he's learned, he's talking with Ray Rice and their situation, he's become a spokesperson for it, whatever. He'll find his way back into the league at that age.
Probably so. When the things when things calm down and they get, you know, and then the movement or whatever, the Greek chorus, as you say, move on to other important things like debating Baby It's Cold Outside.
You know? All right, well, let's switch topics here, and here's something that we have not had a chance to talk about, but has become now a trending trend, I guess, and I wonder if we are not seeing the end of the bowl, the college bowl as we know it, because at least here in Michigan, and they seem to be the most afflicted by it, but there are other teams having it as well. Three of their star players now are not going to play in their bowl game, the Peach Bowl, because they're going to the NFL draft. And they are starting to look like the exhibition team that plays in, you know, just before the season starts, where they're resting everybody. And this is only going to happen more and more. I remember the first time it happened, it was big controversy over, you know, whether a player owed his team to play in the bowl game, and now this is just de rigueur. This is absolutely normal. Players say, hey, what do I have to play in a bowl game for? You know, I don't want to get hurt. There are several players who had that happen to them. Jake Butt from Michigan was one of them, who got hurt in a bowl game, and it affected their draft status. And once they declare that they're going to the NFL, they don't owe their college team, their college coach, or even their college anything. You can say anything you want about them. They don't have to listen. So I wonder if we're not seeing basically the end of bowls lay out before our eyes, at least the ones that don't count. Because who wants to go to a bowl game and travel across the country and pay all that money, whatever, and not see the star quarterback, the star running back, or the star defensive end? And I think this is going to end up leading to an 8-game playoff, because they're going to need to try to salvage some of those bowls. And then maybe the weed whacker, Gasparilla, big boy, bad boy, mower bowls are going to go away. What do you guys think?
Have you looked at the stands for these games over a long time, guys? These are nothing more, other than the big games, which finance the sport, okay? Have you looked at the stands for some of these bowl games, these weed whacker bowls, okay? And I say that with all due respect to weed whackers.
Weed whackers.
I don't even think there is a weed whacker bowl anymore.
Gasparilla.
Okay? But these are television. They just are space fillers on ESPN, most of these games. They shoot the Robert. You know this. You see how tight they shoot these games. So the whole stadium looks like those expensive seats down near the field at Yankee Stadium during the baseball season. So if I'm a kid, I'm thinking, wait, should I risk myself for a made-for-television bowl game, or should I give myself every single possible chance to be healthy when I go to the combine and set? Mitch, I'm not playing. Oh, everybody remembers what happened to Willis McGahee in the Miami Ohio State National Championship game when he ripped his knee up.
There is a very easy solution for this. Pay the players. Pay the players. Everybody's making money off the bowl games except the labor force. This is true of all college sports. But especially a bowl game, when they're just getting money, as you're saying, they're made for TV events. So why not pay the players? They'll show up if you pay them, probably most of them.
You know what? I don't think they're going to show up even if you pay them.
No. Not the
not
top
got enough money.
Maybe
you're
not the top guys, but other guys who are so bored. You know, it's like...
Well, those guys don't have any reason not to play, because they're not necessarily declaring for the draft, unless they're seniors, I guess, and they you know, maybe you end up losing your whole senior class.
I think quarterbacks would play.
I'm talking about the star players, which is really why you want to see teams play. Let's face it. You don't want to see the second-string quarterback or the third-string running back. And these are the guys who tend to jump out early. And, you know, when it first came up, there was this whole thing about, well, don't you owe something to your team, you know, to finish a season? How dare you, and you're not finishing a season. Now I've noticed, and it was Urban Meyer, he wasn't the first, but I know one of his players, maybe it was last year, did this, and he was, you know, fine with it. Because I think coaches get out in front of this and say, okay, I'm not going to win this battle. Let me be the guy who goes on record as saying the NFL is really important so that I'll get better recruits. Because they're going to come to me and they're going to understand that I'm watching out for their NFL career. And the, you know, these guys will do anything to get better recruiting classes. Now it's at the point where it's really hard kind of to make an argument unless you're playing in one of the two bowl games that count for the playoffs, in which case, you know, it'd be pretty hard-pressed to say, well, I'm not going to play in that playoff game because I want to save myself for the NFL draft because, first of all, you probably haven't declared yourself yet because you're still kind of really involved actively. And secondly, that hurts your character, you know, going into an NFL draft. It says, wait a minute, this guy didn't even want to play when it really mattered. We don't, you know, do we really want to draft a guy like that? But there are only four teams that play in those bowls right now. And every other bowl, including the New Year's Day bowls and including the Rose Bowl this year, and what used to be traditionally big bowls, and there's a lot of money in those things, they're getting second-class status. And I just don't see how you sustain this, Mike. I mean, you can only you can put as many people as you want in front of a small camera window, but how does the box office and all the rest of it justify putting up teams for 4 or 5 days at, you know, at hotels and flying them in and all the rest of it if nobody wants to watch
Mitch,
these things?
I'm totally with you, and I have wondered for years. You know, my sons and I, if we're lying around, we'll watch some of these dopey games, but I've wondered how they're sustainable. But how much tourism can there be if they're not filling the stands? Now, but this trend, boy, you talk about trends. It's nearly two dozen players are not going to play in these dopey games. And if I'm Will Grier, the West Virginia quarterback, who has a chance to be a first-round pick, am I going to lay it on the line against Syracuse in the Camping World Bowl? No, I'm not.
Have we seen the quarterbacks drop? I don't remember seeing quarterbacks as much dropping out of these bowl games as other positions.
Well,
because they want to show their skills.
It's just because it hasn't happened yet.
By the way, you brought up the name Urban Meyer. Did you see where Urban Meyer is now going to teach a course on leadership and character? I mean, yeah. I'll say that again. Urban Meyer is now going to teach a course on leadership and character.
Is he teaching that at Ohio State?
I think so, yes.
Well, then that ought to tell you everything you need to know about
Ohio
State.
And you know
by the way, here's one last thing I want to throw out there.
By the way, Harbaugh is also teaching a course there, and Meyer will beat him there, too.
his kids will get better grades. There's one other thing I want to throw out there quickly, and then we'll get to our parting shots in the college world as well. And that was, you know, signing day just took place this a couple days ago. And there's a new trend in signing. I hate signing day, and I'm going to do a parting shot in a minute. But there's a new trend now and a new word, flip. Have you noticed this now? Alabama flipped a guy. Michigan flipped a guy. What this basically means is, folks listening at home, if you don't follow this, is a kid spends like months talking to a recruiter from a particular school, goes there, has the weekend, gets put up, gets a million phone calls and a million letters, gets the home visit. Mom makes the cake and the famous dish that she makes. They sit there, they say, we're going to take care of your son. Okay, we're going to come here. And then at the last minute, some other school comes in and says, you don't want to go there. You want to go with us. And the kid says, yeah, I want to go with you. And that's called a flip. And so now the schools are being celebrated for flipping guys who were about to commit to somebody else or already had committed to someone else and now decommit and commit to someone. Michigan got a guy, apparently a guy who they had, and then Alabama flipped him. But then at the last minute on Wednesday, Michigan flipped him back. And now he's coming back. And they're writing these stories like, isn't this great? They flipped him as if these are coins or something without anything about wait a minute, what about the promise you made? What about the commitment you made to somebody? Is that supposed to count for anything? No. Flipping is now the best verb that you can have in this ridiculous world of college recruiting.
Well, let me just say that I think flipping is the operative word here, but it's what the kids are flipping their middle finger to the schools that they just screwed. Before we get to our parting shots, let me tell you about our friends from Gillette. And we've been telling you for a couple of months now how happy we are that Gillette has attached their brand to the Sports Reporter's brand. And it's, you know, you've heard me say this before. I grew up in a Gillette family. My father handed me my first Gillette razor when it was time to shave. I've done that with my three sons. But Robert, here's the thing about Gillette. And I think this is one of the great selling points that we have, whether you're talking about the Mach 3 or the Fusion Pro Shield or the razors or the shaving cream. Mitch Albom, who has apparently the facial hair of a 12-year-old, he only shaves about three times a week. So how valuable are those three shaves? Well, I say pretty damn valuable.
I'd say they're precious.
Precious. That's
I treat
that's,
them as precious thank experiences.
You. See,
I cherish
why
each
you have,
time.
That's why you have.
I saved my whiskers. Actually, I
no,
had
no.
A big
I, I okay. That's
I saw
creepy.
Them on eBay. I'm gonna.
Okay, that's creepy. But here's the point, Robert. Here's the point. The point is, if you're only going to shave three times a week, I said this the other day. How valuable would Sunsets be if there are only three of those every week? So if Mitch Albom is devoting his three shaves a week to Gillette, that shows you how good these razor blades are. And now, for Mitch and everybody else, you can get Gillette quality blades at the best value and convenience with Gillette On Demand. With Gillette On Demand, you can get blades delivered directly to your door. You subscribe to Gillette On Demand today and get 50% off your first order with the special offer code SPORTSREPORTERS50 at checkout. Enjoy free shipping and every fourth order free with subscription. Of course, with Mitch, every fourth order, he'd only use these blades like he'd go through like three a year. Visit well, Gillette
not,
On Demand.
You're not letting up on this thing here.
I'll tell you.
No,
by the way,
you.
Amazon now has the five whiskers you meet in heaven is on the bestseller list.
Jesus. Oh, God. Oh, God. Kill me now. Okay. Visit Gillette On Demand, GilletteOnDemand.com, and use SportsReporters50 for 50% off your first order. It is time for our parting shots, and Robert Wohl will lead us off.
You have meddled in the primal forces of nature. Yes, I am quoting the great Paddy Chayefsky in Network, but I'm actually talking about the absurd overreaction to the selection of Harold Baines to baseball's Hall of Fames by pundits, fans, and yes, sports talk hosts. Critics scream that Baines doesn't have the necessary numbers. Spoiler alert, it is not the Hall of Numbers. It is the Hall of Fame. This election came at a Veterans Committee asked to consider candidates from 1988 to the present, made up of 9 Hall of Fame members, Torrey, Alomar, Bly 11, Pat Gillick, La Russa. They weren't looking at OPS. They're not looking at pitch framing. They're not looking at war. They had been to war with these guys. They were truly his peers who played with, managed, or employed a colleague who embodied everything that the game should be. Now, look, there's no doubt that La Russa and Reinsdorf championed for Baines. But why is that any different than Chris Russo championing for Jeff Kent or Brian Kelly for Billy Wagner? And never mind the hypocrisy of the writers who refused to vote for Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, but happily voted for Pudge Rodriguez and Jeff Bagwell. Look, Hall of Fame is not perfect, but these guys looked at Harold Baines and saw a guy who helped, they feel, helped shape Major League Baseball. And remember, when it comes to that, Bowie Kuhn is in the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame, and Marvin Miller is not.
The great Dick Schaap died 17 years ago today at Lenox Hill Hospital in New York City. He was just 67 years old. He went into the hospital for hip replacement surgery a few days after we had done a post 9/11 Sports Reporter show on television, and things went tragically wrong from there, and he lived the last 3 months of his life in that hospital, and then he was gone. He was a giant of this business and a gent and such good company on and off the air. It's almost it's really almost impossible to describe. He was also extraordinarily generous both on and off the air. I know that as well as anyone because I sat to his left on our set for more than 10 years. Dave Anderson, the Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the New York Times, who passed away not long ago, and a gent of this business himself, once said this of Dick Schaap: he was the most talented of all of us. Dave meant newspaper columns and television and editing sports magazine and all the books that Dick wrote. He was my friend and Mitch's and Bob Ryan's. There would be no Sports Reporters without him. His friend Muhammad Ali, whom he knew for 40 years, was called the greatest. We all think Mr. Schaap was.
I hate National Signing Day. It showcases the worst of the bloated sports machine that college football has become. High school kids interrupting school to have TV cameras swarm to an auditorium and watch them pull on a hat to announce where they will go to help make a university and its football coach richer. I normally shun this day like no other. But, the heart is the heart. And if your heart wasn't moved by what a kid named Cooper Dawson did to make his signing day different the other day, well, you need to check your blood supply. Dawson is a 6'5" defensive end from South Carolina. To make his announcement, he brought out his friend, Kingsley Fineman. Fineman was in a wheelchair because he suffers from cerebral palsy. Dawson proceeded to announce that while he was going through rehab from an ACL injury, Fineman had been an inspiration who, quote, "the only liability is a bad attitude." He said if Fineman can have a big goofy smile on his face every day, then so can he. Dawson then whispered his school choice to Fineman and let Fineman announce it loudly, "He's going to Syracuse." The crowd cheered, and I admit I found myself kind of cheering too. Not for the selection, but for the heart behind it. This Dawson kid may be a 3-star recruit, but apparently Syracuse just got a 5-star person. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast, which we do every Monday and Friday, which means, yes, we will be with you on Christmas Eve Day on Monday because there's a lot of football and we never sleep. Elves can sleep. Sports reporters cannot. And so we will see you on Monday.
Do elves sleep? Do you know that? You don't know that.
Well, they do. Yes, on the 26th. I have that on very good fact. Yeah.
Okay.
You didn't know that? I thought everybody.
I don't.
Did you ever see Elf?
No. I'm very much pro Elf. I was pro Buddy the Elf. Okay. In both the movies and on Broadway. I just don't know how you would know. For sure that elves ever sleep. Maybe it's like a sweatshop the guy's running.
You know, you write a lot of books about heaven, you get invited to some things that other people don't get invited. That's all I can say.
See, that's the journalism.
You
got to
build your sources.
Sources.
That's all. You can get this podcast anywhere you get popular podcasts, including, of course, radio.com. If you liked what you heard, leave a comment. If you didn't, leave a comment. We always like hearing from you. Until we see you on Monday, on behalf of Robert Wall and Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying have a great weekend.
This elf thing's not over. Doesn't end here.